we're talking about coronavirus testing because it's all the rage, right?
That's what everybody's talking about these days. I get asked constantly about it.
And we should probably explain for posterity, years from now, centuries from now, when people are watching going, why are those two medical news people wearing masks and sitting so far apart?
Yeah.
Because we are social distancing during the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, as best we can with this studio.
Yes.
So it's not quite the 6 feet.
Right.
Sorry.
That's why we also have masks on.
We also have masks. We're trying to get as close to 6 feet apart as we can. And we have separate workstations and we have people working different parts of the office from where they would normally work. So welcome to the pandemic. And welcome to talking about testing.
A day in the life.
Look at this. I actually have some testing materials. These are real tests. You know why these are, how these are real? Or do you know how you can tell these are real?
Because they're in the doctor's office?
We'll get to that, too.
Oh, okay.
Because they're not open to demonstrate on one of us, which we would so freely do.
Oh, man.
Except testing materials are a bit at a premium.
Yep.
We don't, we're not even able to test everybody.
So wasting one.
This, yeah, we can't even waste this for a massive YouTube channel like Auburn Medical Group. We have to actually use these on a real patient.
Yes.
After this.
We are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Diligent about using our stuff appropriately.
So we'll be talking about that.
Yeah.
Dr. Wayne, it's been like two weeks since we've done this?
It has been. Our schedules have been all out of whack lately, just because of the lower amount of people coming in. And we've kind of been alternating in the office just because not as many people come to the doctor's office.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're not here all the time together. Sometimes it's one or the other. And, well, you can see it's freed me up to make some videos I otherwise would not have had time to do. So I've enjoyed that.
Yep.
And many of our viewers have enjoyed that too. Dr. Gwain, what have you done with your time?
Well, I've been home. I've actually been a distance learning parent teacher for some of it.
Okay.
I've been helping out my wife. Our kids are like most kids, away off of school and at home doing the distance learning thing through Zoom. And then they've got this huge list of things that they need to do every day. So on the days I'm not here, for about half the day, I'm doing that, helping out my kids.
Wow.
But I'm also doing some things on my own. I've actually been writing some more current event topics related to the COVID-19 pandemic on my blog. So go check that out. The most recent one was on the whole antibody test, which kind of dovetails nicely in with this conversation today. But go check that out, drgreenknight.com. It was a good one. I enjoyed writing it.
Yes, it was. Your blog post and my video, which we both knew each other were doing it, but we didn't see each other's work until we were done with ours.
Yep.
And it's surprising.
Different, yeah.
It's surprising how complementary they are to each other.
Right.
We didn't say the same thing, but at the same time, we weren't contradicting each other either. We were just giving different aspects of the same topic.
Right.
So
yeah.
Catch both if you really want. But we'll do some of it here and we'll respond to your comments and questions about the antibody test, but also about today's news, April 21st, the FDA gave emergency use authorization to an at-home administration administration of a COVID-19 test or a coronavirus test for SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19.
To be done at home.
Not too unlike what we have here.
Would be similar, yeah.
Very,
and this was actually
very
complete
similar
news to me. We've been working kind of off and on, so today was my day on. I was in the office, so I didn't even know about this until you texted me and said, hey, check this out.
I told you about it as soon as I saw it. It came through on staff.
And then our staff here, they kind of got the alert too and were passing around, I think it was a New York Times article that highlighted it. So this is cutting edge news here that we're on top of.
So before we have a discussion about coronavirus testing, we need to talk about two major types of tests that are being done.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They really fall into the PCR test for the virus, PCR referring to the way the test is done.
Right. Yeah.
And then antibody testing, usually with an ELISA. You don't need to know that part.
Yeah.
But there's also the in doctor's office lateral flow type of test, which that's what the video is on. And you talked about it, a little test kit that doctor's offices have, a point of care type test.
Yeah.
So one of them, so you did really good job on the antibodies, so I'll let you do that. I'm going to cover the PCR virus test. So the PCR virus test like this is a test where a sample is obtained. It has been, or originally it was, both nasopharyngeal and pharyngeal, meaning back of the throat, not only back of the throat, but also back of the throat by way of the nose.
So to give you some perspective, if I turn to the side, the nasopharyngeal area, I go in through my nose all the way
to the ear.
To the front of the ear, essentially.
We're going that far in somebody's nose.
So I have heard it said when I was a student, if the patient's not crying after you do this test, you didn't do it right. Right? Is that what you were told to?
Something like similar things,
but it's not a comfortable test. So that's the test that we do here in the office.
And just to talk briefly about things that are passed through the nasopharynx. My background in emergency medicine, one of the procedures we do quite often was sticking in an NG tube, nasogastric tube, that is inserted through the nasal passage, but your destination for the end of this tube is in the stomach. So you just keep feeding this tube down. In a famous x-ray, have you ever seen the x-ray?
No, I don't know.
X-ray of a skull view, that shows a nasogastric tube coiled around inside of the cranium.
Oh, I have seen that one, yeah.
Okay. They have a little stripe on them that shows up on x-ray.
Yep.
And
a little metal stripe.
A little metal stripe on it, or something that shows up
it's
on x-ray.
So
the point of that x-ray is always to teach people the anatomy of what they're working with, that it is a straight passage back, not up the nose. So the angle is this.
Right.
I don't know how this looks on camera. this.
Yep.
Not
straight.
This. Very important. Now, you'll see pictures all over the internet if you do an image search of administering a COVID-19 test, and it looks like people are going like this. Really scary to Gwen and myself, who have seen that x-ray of the NG tube coiled up inside of somebody's brain. That person had a trauma, and that's why that was able to go through. But the point is, you want to make sure it's going in the right place. This test that can be administered at home actually doesn't have to be nasopharyngeal. That was the big deal.
Which is interesting.
That was the big thing the FDA was holding off on, was because they thought the test really needed to be administered in a doctor's office. It's actually the same test.
To be done appropriately, yeah.
Yeah, same test that's done in the doctor's office, except done by the patient at home and then sent in to have the exact same test run. Same machine runs the test. That's what this at-home test is that got the emergency use authorization. So are we asking you to stick this thing all the way back straight in your nose to tickle your throat and gag you and make you cry? That's what it would take for it to have the same sensitivity to pick up if you have the virus as if we do it. The FDA is accepting that the sensitivity of the test will be lower when people do it at home compared to if it's done at the doctor's office. It may not come with the really thin, pliable swab that we use here that's safer to use in somebody's nose.
Those thicker.
And I haven't seen the insert with it, but I really, really doubt that they're encouraging home
nasopharyngeal use. I wouldn't think so.
All the way back. I'm pretty sure they're saying use it in the front of the nose.
Yeah. If it's not in trained hands, that could be dangerous.
So if it's not as good, why? I submit, why would the FDA approve if they know it's not as sensitive?
Right, that is the question. So I think my thought would be that if you get enough people doing this, you're actually going to be able to catch some trends and probably pick up enough people that you're actually going to truly see what the nationwide picture is.
It's a trade-off.
Yeah.
There's a trade-off. There is something to be gained for allowing people to be able to do it at home.
Yes.
People will get it done that otherwise wouldn't. It'll be able to be done on a larger scale if you include that in addition to what's done in the doctor's office. So that's worth the few percentage points loss in sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's the PCR test. Oh, I didn't say what it's testing. It's testing the virus.
Right.
Particles of the virus itself. And what it's telling you is that the virus is there active. The person has the infection. I don't know if those tests are all that sensitive early on. I believe they are.
I wouldn't think so.
since viral shedding is maximum right before onset of symptoms, I would expect it actually is right then, and then would continue for the duration of the illness.
But if you don't have any symptoms, it would not be the best test.
Unless you're just right at that point where you're on the verge that day before.
The likelihood of that is extremely low.
So it's for when you have symptoms, really, is when it's intended. Mm-hmm. And it's going to last until the virus is done, and the symptoms will last maybe a week after that. You may still have a dry cough a week after that. It's going to last 2 to 3 weeks that this test is expected to be positive. So, Dr. Gwain, you tell us about the antibody test.
So the antibody test is a little different, and there have been some tests that have been approved for the emergency use authorization, and it's different. So it's for people essentially without symptoms. I think that's mostly what it's intended for, to see if you have had the infection in the past. Now, it can detect a current infection if administered at the right time. So there, to understand it, you do need to know a little bit about immunology. So there are a bunch of different types of antibodies out there. The two main ones we talk about here are IgM and IgG. IgM is the antibody that is working when you have an active infection. It is actively working to fight off that infection, to find those, grab onto it, and have your macrophages, killer cells, gobble it up and kill it. So
works immediately. IgM, yes, immediate.
Yes, that's one way to remember it. The other one is IgG, and that is kind of, if you want to think of it, as the memory antibodies. So it
or the one that goes on.
Goes on.
IgG.
Nice. Now you guys won't forget it, Don. So when you have your quiz, you'll know. So IgM, IgG. So IgG is the one that will stay after the infection is done to hopefully convey some more long-term immunity. The tests that are out will test for both of those. And for IgM, early on in the disease, that's not it's not active yet. So you do need to be exposed to the virus, have that virus build up to a level that's high enough for your body to mount an immune response and start producing that IgM. So that does take some time.
It does.
So in the first few days of the illness, you're not going to have a positive result. Yeah. After that, you should. And then it'll slowly convert over to that IgG. Now, once you have that IgG, there are still questions if you have that, what that means. And there are a lot of the higher ups in the WHO, in the CDC, who say we don't even know what that means because we just don't have the data. IgG antibodies, while they stick with you, sometimes they wane. Sometimes they'll go down. For example, tetanus, that's probably the best example
that's
I have.
Yeah.
You need to get a booster on tetanus every 10 years because those IgG antibodies wane. Another thing is, you know, it stays with you for life. You get those antibodies, they stick with you, you get the infection again, it notices that virus, if that's the exact same, and will fight it off before you get any symptoms. Or you get very mild symptoms compared to the previous time. Another thing that could happen is if this is a virus that mutates, like a flu virus, which is entirely possible because this is a coronavirus, and there are a lot of other coronaviruses out there that it can have some what's called antigenic drift with. That's the right one, right? Mm-hmm. Drift, not shift. this is going back to medical school. But where it kind of trades some of its antigens, right?
Yeah.
Then it can pick up and look like a completely new virus that's sometimes even more severe, but oftentimes has the same severity.
Yeah.
So that could happen, and that could come back to bite us next year. Often like the flu virus does. We don't know yet, and the experts out there don't know yet either. So the usefulness of an antibody test is still up in the air. Now, it could tell us how many people have had an asymptomatic infection. That's probably the best information you're going to get from this. How many people got the disease, didn't show any symptoms, and now have an immune response.
So an example of that would be Los Angeles, where they had a whole lot of antibody tests, tested lots of people, and found that about 4% of the people they tested were positive.
Yeah.
Now, not that many people had symptoms.
Right. Yeah, so that was a Stanford test, I believe, that they were doing.
Well, it was USC and LA, and there was the same test that Stanford used
also. Stanford did there. Okay, yeah. So about 3,300 participants, I think. So let's think about that. The article that went out said, many more people have had coronavirus than previously thought, which is great. Many more people have, up to 4%.
4% is the total error.
But what does that...
That's the many.
But let's look at the bigger picture. That means
that
95, 96% of those who don't have symptoms don't have it and are still susceptible to this. So
still susceptible.
That's still the vast majority, 19 out of 20 people, if you want to put it in terms like that.
Yep.
So we're still kind of in the thick of this. There seemed to be some plateauing. We still see, we are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel, but it's tough to tell what would happen if we let up on our strict social distancing and the other guidelines that are out right now.
We'll have more cases. We'll have more people in the hospital.
Right.
Although, on the other side, you could say, at least in our county, we could afford, I hate to say it that way because it sounds like you're saying it's okay for people to die.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the accusation that goes against anybody who tries to relax at all. And I don't want to throw that accusation at people who say relaxing is something that should be talked about. It should be. We should, and we're coming up with ways to do it. And it's going to involve testing. And really, we got to know. We need this information. We need to know if an antibody test shows that the person has immunity. We really need that answer. And we're still waiting for that. We're going to let you know as soon as we know.
Which we don't know yet. So there actually are some good questions from those watching. We appreciate
your
participation. First of all, Laura Spurs, thanks for tuning in. You are a channel member, and we always give shout-outs to those who are channel members. So one person asks, I'm hearing that if you didn't have a bad enough case, you could not build up enough of the IgG antibodies. You're hearing correct. They have tested some people who have not converted and do not have an IgG response to this. So in essence, they are still susceptible to having this disease because they don't have that memory antibody.
Yep.
Another question. Further, what concentrations of IgG or IgM are sufficient indicators? Great question. Because this
is
an emergency use authorization, we don't know. Each and every company who has made their own tests is supposed to do some internal testing to corroborate and make sure that it is a good test. But I haven't been able to find that data. Have you?
I found it on the one that got the emergency use authorization.
On that one.
Celex. They said.
But there are how many other ones that are still out there promoting tests?
I don't know.
I think there's over 100. So if you do decide to go into your doctor's office who is giving you this test, ask them what test it is. Ask them what the sensitivity and specificity is. Ask them what company is the test coming from. And you know, these are all reasonable things that you should know. Because if you get a negative test, at least if I got a negative test, I would want to know that's a truly negative or other ways. Is it a true positive? What's the percentage that this isn't?
And we should also put out the disclaimer that even though Celex is the one that has the EUA today and LabCorp is the one that has it for the at-home testing, this will change tomorrow.
Yeah.
These things are coming up.
it's changing daily. Like I said,
I made two videos on it today. Within a few days
on
new EUAs that came out.
Right. Yeah, I just put out my blog yesterday, and
then
today a new test was approved. So this is changing daily. So,
all right. What other comments or questions?
Yeah. Let's see here. Sorry, I haven't been following.
You too can get that special recognition like Laura by becoming a channel member. And if you want to know how, you just look at our channel on YouTube, and there's a little thing that says join. And a lot of people are subscribed, but they don't get notifications when we go live. In fact, maybe you're watching this after the fact and wish you could have seen it. You got to hit that bell icon on the Auburn Medical Group channel page on YouTube and then configure your notifications so that you will get notifications from YouTube when we're going live.
Yep. So a few questions. One person said their daughter went through a drive-through testing and was scared and crying. She had to do the nose swab. If it was done at a... drive-through, though, that was probably a nasopharyngeal swab.
They're uncomfortable.
I don't blame her for crying. That is miserable. I remember we had to do those on each other in medical school. Did you have to do that? Yeah.
We didn't have to do that.
We had to do that. That was one of those things where there's like, oh, you got to learn somehow.
What about the urethral swab?
I didn't sign up for that one.
Okay.
Actually, no.
So seriously, we would demonstrate it if there was not such a need for not wasting the swabs. We would do that for
you. And then there was something else. I'd be scared to do that on myself. Yes, you're right, because that's why they're not recommending the nasopharyngeal. They're just recommending a front of the nose just sticking
up
there.
I can't give myself a shot. I can't check my own blood sugar, but I'd do that.
I think I could do that.
Yeah.
I just have to like measure it out. Okay, that's far as just go until my.
Do you think you could do your own digital disimpaction?
Why are we going there?
I was just wondering.
Every time. You know, who says I haven't already? No, just kidding.
Why do you think I'm so relaxed today? I was just curious.
Somebody asked about, can you speak about FDA and non-FDA approved antibody tests? We spoke a little bit on that, but maybe you can expand a little bit.
FDA versus non-FDA?
Yeah, right.
Well, for the antibody test, there are, I believe they're all just emergency use authorization at this point because there hasn't been enough time for the FDA to do its own corroboration of the efficacy of these tests. Or accuracy. That means that they look at what's sent to them by the company and decide, well, it looks good enough given the emergency situation to go ahead and approve it. They've done that for only one point of care antibody test that's in a doctor's office and none of those others that are in doctor's offices. So
over 100.
It bugs me when I see on Facebook that another doctor in our area is doing the test before the emergency use authorization for a point of care test was available. You know, it may be that that product gets the emergency use authorization tomorrow.
Right.
But it just bugs me.
Well, I would choose not to do that. I have my other reasons why that bugged me, that it was just more of a for-profit enterprise. And we got all these things saying, hey, you can have testing and it's going to be free. Whereas, you know, people are doing these things, just charging cash out of pocket for an antibody test, which who knows what the sensitivity and specificity is.
Now,
maybe they do.
I believe the EUA test, the point of care, like if we got a bunch of Celex, I believe those would be covered by the insurance.
Because it's actually been approved.
As long as there's a CPT for it. And I think there is once they get the EUA.
Right.
But we're not even doing that yet because we need some answers to some questions before we do that. So, I don't know. Should we put a question in the viewers' minds about doctors that just jump all over tests that aren't approved?
We're in weird times. So I
don't know.
I don't know if you can. I would just have your questions available and make sure that you are satisfied with the test that the doctor is administering. Make sure that you know.
I would say just because all your friends on Facebook are getting the test and have their results is not the reason that you have to go and do that.
Right.
Save your $100.
Yeah.
Okay.
One more question. This is an interesting one. Somebody says, I'm symptomatic and immunocompromised. I've gotten two negative tests, rapid tests, but I'm getting worse.
Well, it's probably something other than COVID-19.
Yeah, if you have two negative tests, they say that one negative test.
If we're talking
PCR. Yeah, those tests. One negative test is not always accurate, but if you have two negative tests and they were done accurately, then you can be pretty sure. If it was an uncomfortable test, then it was a good test. But if you're not getting better, it sounds like you need to go back to your doctor and figure out what this is.
Is it bacterial pneumonia?
Yeah,
is it
not
influenza?
COVID-19.
Yeah.
It's probably something else, but it still sounds that if you're getting worse, you need to get that taken care of, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Ask your doctor. Yep. Don't let doctors on the internet. Be your doctor.
I still like the question, though. I'm glad that we were able to address that.
Yeah.
There are other things out there.
Before
COVID-19 hit us, we were at the peak of influenza.
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about all these people who said, oh, I had COVID-19 in December last year. How many times have you heard that?
I've seen it, but I haven't heard it myself. Yeah,
I've heard it way too much. So we're on the West Coast, and there's this rumor that's floating around saying, hey, COVID-19 or the coronavirus, this novel coronavirus, already came to the United States on the West Coast because we're so close to China. Apparently that matters. Came and cycled through California in December of last year or January. Now, first, China didn't even report its first case until the end of January. We didn't have our first case till the end of February. So anything before that is definitely suspect. Now the big question is, can we prove any of that? No, we can't. This whole test that came the testing of the individuals who were asymptomatic, having 4% who have positive antibodies now, I don't think they had COVID-19 back last year in December or January of this year. They just probably had an asymptomatic case. They got it recently in March, probably, or late February, and just didn't show any symptoms. So there's no way of telling, but this whole thing, if you had an illness last year in December or January, don't think that you had COVID-19. Wait until a good antibody test is out.
Yeah.
And even then.
You know. And I would go a step further than I'd normally say probably, and just keep, you know, that little bit of, well, I guess it's possible. I'm not even going to put that out there. Just don't even think that you had it. Don't even think you had it.
Extremely unlikely.
Go ahead and get the antibody test that's approved, but don't think you had it back then.
Yep. I think we answered all the big questions. Thanks for those questions, guys.
Thanks for participating in our show with us.
Yeah.
Anybody you want to thank?
Yeah, absolutely. So go check out the blog. I do want to thank Boo-Boo Kitty and Teresa Watt. You guys support the blog, and I appreciate that. It's a good read, and has some nice links to the FDA resources and a few articles that go into this in a little more in-depth.
Yes, and welcome to our new channel members, and we want to thank Lindsay Antoine especially for being a part of both Patreon and being a channel member. And there's merch. Take your picture with the merch, and we will put it on. We'll put it on the show.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Wade?
Yeah. Ed, good conversation.
Dr. Mark Vaughn telling you to stay in good health.